Good morning, this is Brian Trumbor with your Week in Review for Saturday, January 23rd. I was watching the gut-wrenching news out of Haiti and the stories of survival, and of course one thing that stands out is the heroic action of the doctors, who only asked to be given the tools, including the appropriate supplies, in order to work their magic. At the same time this week, we had more news on the banking front, both in terms of bonuses and proposed reforms and legislation. So I thought back to my youth, say 1966 to 76, ages 8 to 18, when there were three professions that were the most respected and were paid commensurately: doctors, lawyers, and bankers. All three were looked up to in those days, and not coincidentally, they always seemed to live in the finer sections of town, and no one begrudged them their success. There was another subset in the big commuter town I grew up in, Summit, New Jersey, that was comprised of Wall Streeters, and they weren't as easily defined for a kid growing up. You knew they did something important, at least you thought it was, and were paid well for it, but you didn't know exactly what the job entailed. As you got older, though, you learned that some either ran their firms, old line outfits that with few exceptions are long gone, were involved in the municipal business, mutual funds, or classic stockbrokers, things of that sort. There was never any reason, at least in the era I've outlined, not to respect this profession, too. Then in the 1980s, things began to change with the emergence of the corporate raiders and the likes of Michael Milken, who, for the life of me, I have trouble respecting today, despite his good works, because he really was one of the all-time dirtballs in financial history. Computers were increasingly sophisticated, and you had the advent of program trading, which played a huge role in the crash of 1987. Wall Street, to some, became a dirty word. But it was exciting, and I, for one, jumped at the opportunity, or the chance, to join the party when a job was presented to me in the fall of 1982. The great bull market having commenced that August. But fast forward to today, and a street that, coupled with way too loose monetary policy on the part of the Federal Reserve and irresponsible personal behavior on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. America, as well as around the world, and Wall Street's reputation has never been lower. It's well deserved. The leaders of the biggest firms were reckless and/or idiots, and the practices often fraudulent. Wall Street became a little more than an exercise in seeing who could game the system, and in one form or another, we all paid a price. Meanwhile, you have the doctors in Haiti trying to work miracles in awful conditions that have to sap one's soul, yet from time to time a miracle is indeed performed. May doctors ascend back to the top of our profession rankings, and with the huge costs associated with their schooling and training, may they be the ones receiving government assistance in the future. May this be the profession some of our best and brightest aspire to. May there be a time in the not-too-distant future where a kid asks his parents, "Who lives in that house?" And have the parents say with respect, "Oh, that's Dr. Jones. He's done some great things, Bobby. I want to be a doctor too, then," the kid will reply. You all know my favorite saying around here, "Wait 24 hours," which among its many meanings is about not jumping to conclusions or painting everything with a broad brush. Such is the case when it comes to the proposed banking regulations, taxes, and reforms put forward by the Obama administration the past 10 days that have so riled the equity markets. Suffice it to say, the big drop in stocks will not help in terms of both investor and consumer confidence, and I would offer that the risk of a double dip increased as stocks fell. This is a very fragile recovery, and it can still go either way. I can't help but add, I'm happy I sold my home the other week and the checks cleared. Cash isn't a bad thing to be holding these days, even if the interest on same is virtually nil. But as for the potential reforms and regulation, each one needs to be taken separately. I said I was against the bank tax last week, and then the other day Warren Buffett blasted President Obama's plan as a guilt tax. Buffett said, "I just think a tax that's enacted with the idea that the headlines will be appealing and that a certain amount of vengeance will be achieved, I don't think that's the greatest form of tax policy." We'll see how Congress handles it. Then you have the Volcker Rule, named after former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, now an economic advisor to Obama. Volcker had been ignored for much of the first year of the administration, but in the past month, he's made waves around the world with some of his comments, many of which I've noted in Week in Review. Nuggets such as the best financial innovation of the past few decades is the ATM, and investment bankers can't point to being responsible for a single fraction of growth in the global economy. In turn, he regained the ear of the president and his closest advisors, to the detriment of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, who has favored a more moderate approach to reform of the banking system. Volcker wants the big banks to exit the risk-taking business, at least in terms of using client money for functions such as proprietary trading. In what is being dubbed Glass-Steagall-Lite, the banks that have federally insured deposits could not then use that money to execute trades for their own accounts. If you want to do that, fine, just don't call yourself a commercial bank at the same time and expect the government to bail you out when things go horribly bad. This presents a big issue for the likes of Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Citigroup, for example. They can go back to their old ways and become either a trading house or bank, but they can't do both. Now, I'm grossly oversimplifying, and we don't have all the details of the proposals yet, let alone know how a dysfunctional Congress will treat it all. But the idea is to eliminate, in Volcker's words, the bank's unmanageable conflicts of interest. Restrict banks from making speculative investments that do not benefit its customers. The problem is in drawing the line, what's legal and what's not under the proposal. In the end, though, the biggest banks will have to divest themselves of some of their operations, though I'm guessing it will be nowhere near the market mover the street made it out to be the past few days. Editorial from the Wall Street Journal. President Obama and Democrats have settled on demonizing Wall Street as a campaign theme for November's elections. If history is any guide, Mr. Obama and New York Senator Chuck Schumer will now persuade Wall Street to underwrite this campaign. Ah, the politics of hope and change, how refreshing. Phony populism aside, yesterday Mr. Obama introduced his first serious idea into the debate on reforming the financial system. In calling for an end to proprietary trading at firms with a federal safety net, the president showed that he now understands an important principle. Risk-taking in the capital markets is incompatible with a taxpayer guarantee. Under the president's still sketchy plan, firms that hold government-insured deposits or are eligible to receive cheap loans in an emergency from the Federal Reserve would not be able to trade for their own accounts. Mr. Obama has at last joined the most important policy discussion, how to eliminate the moral hazard now embedded in the U.S. financial system. Political assaults on banker compensation have done nothing to address this core problem that enables gargantuan bonuses. If we are going to have a Fed and a political class as reckless as we have, then we need a more comprehensive answer to financial risk. Bankruptcy for risk takers who bet wrong is the best option. Barring that, strict limits on margin and leverage, especially for holders of insured deposits, can be helpful. Mr. Obama's suggestion yesterday of limits on the size of financial firms, with the limits still to be determined, deserves a hearing but would seem more problematic. Still, we're encouraged by yesterday's announcement. The Democrats appear to finally realize that too big to fail is a problem to be solved, not the foundation of a modern banking system. Mild words coming from the Journal, I think you'd agree. It helps that Paul Volcker, the author of the proposal, is so highly respected. But the threat of new regulations was not the only thing spooking Wall Street the last 3 days of the week, one in which the Dow Jones fell over 430 points. You also had the sudden uncertainty concerning the renomination of Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, along with concerns over China and its ability to engineer a soft landing for its boom economy, as well as tepid profit outlooks from some of America's largest corporations. It would appear Bernanke will still win another term, with this coming to a head in the next few days. And as an investor in China myself, I'm confident that despite the announcement the economy grew at a whopping 10.7% pace in the fourth quarter, the monetary authorities there, through the gradual tightening policy now in place, though not formally until March, it would seem, which is when they have the next People's Congress, will avoid a collapse in its property bubble as well as prevent inflation now at 1.9% from taking hold. Yes, that's exhibiting a lot of confidence, but I think China can do it. Those who are skeptical, however, do have a point. The banking system here has never been tested like this. Just a few other notes on China of importance, particularly as these pertain to the rest of the region. December industrial production was up 18.5%, slightly down from November's pace, believe it or not. while retail sales rose a staggering 17.5%. GDP for all of 2009 came in at 8.7% after a 6.1% start in the first quarter. As to the outlook from the likes of GE and IBM, both of whom exceeded expectations, it was pretty solid, though in the case of IBM in particular, it's more about internal trends rather than any broad-based outlook for industry in general, as service contract signings rose, but consultancy revenues fell, the latter a better gauge of business sentiment as it's a discretionary item. Then you have the banks. While Goldman Sachs' profits soared, those with a consumer bent, such as Citigroup and Bank of America, reported further heavy losses owing to retail lending and credit card defaults. However, the banks largely maintained the worst is over as they lowered future loan loss provisions. But, as bank executives readily admit, there remains a ton of uncertainty out there. Globally, IMF Managing Director Dominique Strauss-Kahn said that a key lesson from the global financial crisis is that authorities need to beef up supervision, more so than regulations of financial institutions. You may have the best regulations in the world, but if it's not supervised correctly, it's no use, he said. Strauss-Kahn echoed that while the IMF will be raising its growth outlook, recovery remains very fragile. To that end, there is an overriding theme in the world these days. The global recovery was dependent on global stimulus, and some measures are expiring, as institutions such as the IMF warn the premature lifting of any stimulus could be disastrous. Lastly, you had the election of Republican Scott Brown to fill Ted Kennedy's Senate seat in one of the major political upsets in American history. I have further details in my random musings section of Week in Review. But Brown's win did indeed kill health care reform as currently proposed. Commentator George Will said before Tuesday's vote that the health care plan in its Senate form in particular was nothing more than, quote, serial corruption. From the $300 million for Louisiana's Mary Landrieu, the estimated $1 billion over 10 years for Nebraska's Ben Nelson, to the payoff for the unions. Voters obviously saw it the same way, and a president who talked of transparency should be hanging his head in shame. As I noted in last week's review, the union move was the final straw. Turning to the stock market, and what was the worst week since last March's lows, the Dow Jones dropped 4.1% to close at 10,172, while the S&P 500 lost 3.9% and NASDAQ fell 3.6%. As noted earlier, earnings largely came in better than expected, but there's nothing exciting in the comments on future guidance. Executives are for the most part optimistic, but remain cautious. The stock market has already priced in a lot of good news, so it requires more than caution to exceed the recent highs. Late Friday, you also had a reminder how geopolitics can wreak havoc at any moment, with Britain's raising of its terrorism threat level to severe. India is also on high alert for a possible plane hijacking, according to intelligence there. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday, January 30th. And for all other details, check out stocksandnews.com. Click on Week in Review. And have a great week. Go Jets!